Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's easy to ignore a world of troubles when America's plate is full of homegrown bad economic news, but these are tough times in other hemispheres and latitudes, too. National security types in Washington are wondering if economic problems will reach a tipping point and turn into real political instability. Latin America, so far, has managed, but the stress is showing. Last week, Washington's new CIA chief was talking about it. This hour, On Point, how the global economic crisis is hitting Latin America. You can join the conversation. Have you been following the crisis outside U.S. borders? What are you hearing from friends, families, business associates to the south, from Argentina to the Caribbean? A special welcome today to our newest listeners in Miami and beyond on South Florida's NPR news station, 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. We will go to Latin America in a moment, but first, to look at Washington's new attention to economic and political instability, we turn to Fairfax, Virginia, and Joby Warrick. He covers intelligence for The Washington Post. Joby, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
So lots of new noises last week out of Washington about how economic instability may become political instability. What are intelligence folks looking at there?
Well, it's striking to see how the economic meltdown has changed the security landscape in the view of the top intelligence officials of our government. Already, we're seeing a substantial effect on countries throughout the world. The new director of national intelligence said in testimony recently that a quarter of the countries they look at have already had some low-level instability because of the financial problems. And how bad it gets really depends on how long the recession continues. But they're seeing this now as a more serious problem than terrorism in the near term.
You're talking about Admiral Dennis Blair there testifying last week. And did he name names? Did he talk about particular regions where they're seeing warning signs?
Yeah, he took us on a tour of the globe, really, and it's everywhere from Latin America, which is just continues to be a major focus, but also many countries of the developing world, Asia, certainly Africa, countries with serious demographic issues anyway. Now they're seeing rising unemployment, declining revenues from exports, tourism, and it's really starting to shake up the security structure in many of these countries right now.
And is it political instability, changes of government, chaotic changes of government that they're worried about, or is it countries using the United States' current economic vulnerability against it?
It's all of that. I think there's we're already seeing some governments fall because of economic insecurity and unrest. And Admiral Blair even sort of raised the specter of, the 1920s and 30s and the sort of major disruptions, political and otherwise, that occurred during that very turbulent period, and suggesting that we could see some of that same scale of problem if this continues long enough.
And what's he suggesting here? This sounds like a job for bankers and development diplomats.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, and there's a cascading aspect to it. As things get worse in the West, in the developing countries, those effects tend to filter down and become even more pronounced in some of the developing countries. And he's really saying that there's the difficulty this time around is even in countries like China and India with export-based economies and very robust economies, they can't just export their way out of the problem this time. That it's so deeply entrenched and so global in nature that each region of the world is affected, and there's no easy way just to put on the brakes and hope that China or some other big growing economy can bail us out.
And then we come to the comments by new CIA chief Leon Panetta. He is now giving the president, President Obama, an economic intelligence brief. I guess this is a new thing to specifically point at that. And he came out last week to talk to the press afterward, after his first briefing to the president. And one of the things he said was, I just met with someone from Latin America who discussed the fact that there are some serious problems that we have to pay attention to in Latin America that involve economic instability. And so he was asked, well, what countries? And he said Argentina, Ecuador, and Venezuela. Argentina, very upset about this, called the U.S. ambassador and said, what are you talking about? It seemed like kind of an off-the-cuff comment. What's Panetta pointing to? Is this just a casual aside?
Yes, I think this unfortunately spiraled out of control and became kind of an early diplomatic crisis for the Obama administration, crisis being probably too hard of a word. But I think the reaction from the Argentine side was mostly for domestic consumption. There's been that the United States, it sort of meddles too much in the affairs of the Southern Hemisphere, and so Argentina called. You know, what's the problem? You know, we're doing fine. You're trying to, you know, interfere in our economy once again. So they sort of demanded an apology, which Panetta was only too happy to give. But his point was that you know, he's talking to our, you know, intelligence liaisons from throughout the hemisphere, and they're warning him, you know, not using the usual fine diplomatic language, but says, we've got some serious problems here. If things don't get better, there's going to be some serious, you know, political instability, and they name some names of specific countries that they're worried about.
Of course, this is interesting, Joby, because it comes after half dozen years when Latin America's done quite well by historical standards, and at a time when the United States hardly seems to be in a position to point fingers at Latin America or to instruct on the basis of its own perfect model.
Yeah, that's true. But if you look at countries, Venezuela is one that's often mentioned. Here's a country that's been riding high in recent years because it's an oil producer and it's been sort of bathing in oil revenues. Now those revenues are drying up. Other parts of the economy are starting to sour, and there's real concern what's going to happen in that country the next year or two if the current trends continue. And you can see the same ripples heading through other parts of the hemisphere as well.
The economic crisis beginning to hit home on the political front certainly has the attention of the intelligence community. Joby Warrick covers intelligence for The Washington Post. He joined us from Fairfax, Virginia. Joby, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We're talking about how the global economic crisis is hitting Latin America this hour. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. What do you hear from family, friends, business associates? Let's go now to South America, Bogota, Colombia, and Ricardo Avila, editor-in-chief of Portafolio, daily financial newspaper published in Colombia. He was Colombia's deputy foreign affairs minister and later chief of staff for the Organization of American States in Washington until 2000. Mr. Avila, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. How are you?
Very well. You're sitting in Bogota looking out on the rest of Latin America. We had this moment where our new CIA chief raised Latin America up last week in terms of economic instability. How did that meet your ear, Mr. Avila? Does it look like there's trouble on the horizon or not?
Yes, for some countries there is, basically because those countries that you mentioned behaved irresponsibly and they had a bonanza and they didn't save for the winter, to put it in those words.
So when he points to Argentina and Venezuela and Ecuador, does that make sense to you? Do these countries have particular problems right now, and why?
Completely, because, well, in the case of Argentina, basically Argentina had a huge influx of resources thanks to the high prices of crops, especially soybeans, and they basically spend it all. The same case with Venezuela and with Ecuador, and all of this mixed with political situations. For example, the president of Ecuador is up for re-election in the middle of April, so he's trying to hold things steady until that date because he's immensely popular, but he knows that he faces some very harsh realities ahead of him, and basically I believe that's the first country that is going to go down, to put it in these words.
When you say go down, what do you mean? We're looking at different news reports here. Just in the last day or two in Venezuela, troops occupy a rice plant, the biggest rice plant in the country. Government troops going in because they've had trouble over pricing there, disagreements over pricing. Looking here at headlines out of Ecuador, new trade barriers there, imposing new import restrictions on everything from Peruvian shampoo to Chilean grapes to U.S.-made running shoes. That sounds like a trade war maybe, but going down, what does that mean?
Well, in the particular case of Ecuador, Ecuador is an economy that doesn't have its own currency. It's the dollar. So to have a liquidity crisis is very easy because the only thing you need is two people line up in front of banks and begin withdrawing money. And if that happens, the country literally goes down. So what you have is some situation similar to what Argentina experienced at the beginning of the decade, in which banks had to be closed for several days in order to reorder the country. And at that time, we have to remember Argentina abandoned the dollar as its currency and returned to the peso. And Ecuador would have to do the same. The problem for the government are the political consequences, because at that time in Argentina, if we also remember, the president had to leave, and Argentina had like four presidents in a matter of 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
So Ecuador knows that it can follow the same path. And in the case of Venezuela, the situation is a little bit different, because Venezuela has a little bit more money than Ecuador. But at the same time, if oil continues to be below $40 a barrel, the same thing is going to happen. Actually, Venezuela will have to devalue the strong bolivar, as the new currency is called.
Mm-hmm. And Argentina, looking at commodity prices down, soybean prices down 40% or so. They're one of the biggest, I think the second biggest exporter in the world of soybeans. That in itself creating a big problem there. They've got a huge tax on soybean exports, and it's not producing revenue for their government.
Absolutely, and besides, they had a huge drought that also it's going to hurt crops. So what they did is basically they took control of the pension funds, of the private pension funds. But at the same time, the question is, how long, I mean, is that money going to keep them in business? I also believe that the Argentinian government is going to face a huge crisis, probably in some additional months, but that's going to be the case if the economic situation remains as it is, and there's nothing that tells us that that's not going to happen.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how the global economic crisis is hitting Latin America. We've been joined from Bogota, Colombia, by Ricardo Avila, editor-in-chief of Portafolio, daily financial newspaper published there in Colombia. Joining us now from Toronto is Miami-based John Price. He's managing director for business intelligence of Kroll Associates, responsible for Latin America. Been watching the region for quite a while now, first from Mexico City and since 2000 from Miami. Today he's at an energy conference in Toronto. John Price, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have both of you with us. Listen for a moment, if you would, to a little finger-wagging. He's good at it, from Hugo Chavez. This is in an interview last month on CNN Español. And the Venezuelan president dismissed questions about his country's economic troubles and the falling price of oil, said his citizens will be better off than Americans enduring their own economic crisis. He said America doesn't have the capacity to handle the crisis, and he told his interviewer from CNN, Patricia Yanio, who works for American-owned CNN, to watch out for a pink slip of her own.
But right now, in the short term, even though the price of oil may be at the rate at pace it is, we had not anticipated increasing taxes. Like you say, the value of Bolivar. In the end, we have the means to handle the situation. There are other countries that don't have, such as the U.S. The U.S. is going to find itself in a different situation. Be careful, you might lose your job.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez warning the American employed reporter herself, watch out for your job. John Price, look across this region. First, what did you think of Leon Panetta's sort of casual aside about economic instability in Latin America? And if there's cause for concern, where?
Well, I think the three countries he's named are cause for concern. I'm not sure to what degree even civil unrest in those countries translates into any kind of security threat to the United States. But I would add to the list both Bolivia, which is a country that has had real civil strife and has a historic battle ensuing between the highland economy around La Paz, mm-hmm. and the province of Santa Cruz, where much of the gas and mineral deposits are found, and is a part of the country that has wanted to break away from the western or main part of Bolivia for years. And that strife is ongoing right now, and it's creating real civil unrest and real problems. I'd also, and this is going to sound controversial, I'd also put on the list Mexico. And the reason being that although Mexico is a far more stable and private sector friendly market than Argentina, Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, it has a tremendous problem that really has been brewing for a couple of decades now, but it's only the government of Calderon that's really taken it head on, and that is the drug trade.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the drugs that used to have come out of the Andean into the United States through, say, Florida, when that gateway was blocked out, Mexico became the new gateway. And unfortunately, we have a large drug economy in Mexico, and a very sophisticated one. And as Mexico feels, you know, there's an expression that says when America sneezes, Mexico catches a cold. Their economy is really integrated with the United States. So a downturn in the U.S., particularly in the manufacturing sector, creates unemployment very quickly in Mexico, in northern Mexico, precisely where these drug cartels are strongest.
And this
that has immediate
That
has immediate implications in terms of drug trafficking, in terms of migration patterns. Unemployment in Mexico is not a good thing for the border states of the United States.
And this language of failed state coming out of Washington recently on Mexico, that must drive them crazy there. Mr. Avila in Bogota, when you look across Latin America at governments that are doing better, governments that are doing worse, how do you characterize? Are there different camps? I mean, we've heard such success stories in recent years from Brazil, from Chile. Of course, you've got different politics in different countries, sometimes sharply different attitudes on economics. Who's doing well? Who's not?
Well, actually, I believe that when you take a look at the region, actually the region is in a much better shape than in previous crises. First, because this was a crisis that didn't begin in the region.
Mm-hmm.
Second, because over the past few years, most countries behaved responsibly, so they have a strong position in international reserves, more than $500 billion at the start of the crisis. Third, because external debt is down and is less than 30% of GDP, while in the previous crisis it was very high. And fourth, because internal demand has been built up. Thanks to that, I believe the region is still going to have a positive growth as a whole, despite these extreme cases that we looked at. And having even a positive number in terms of GDP growth, I believe, is something that it is very important. Also, we have to remind ourselves that for the U.S., of course, the region has a very high relevance. U.S. trade with the region is more than $500 billion per year. So, and I'm talking about 2006 figures. I expect that in 2007, because of the oil prices, and 2008, that was even higher. So if the region goes bad, is bad business not only for the region but also for the U.S.
Now, there was talk in the good years recently, 2003 to 2008, they had economic growth averaging above 5% in Latin American countries. There was talk of a decoupling from the American economy, that relationship had become less important as China and others moved in. John Price, how do you see that?
Absolutely. You know, there was three drivers of that boom period. One of them was very much in Latin America's hands, and Ricardo has mentioned that. You had excellent governance out of countries like Colombia, Chile, Mexico, Brazil, and Peru that really helped to stabilize the investment climate in those countries and capture a lot of inbound investment. That flooded the markets with liquidity that they never had and kept that money in those countries and allowed the cost of capital to drop to such a degree that credit expanded at almost 25% a year in the region, year in, year out for those 5 years. However, Latin America cannot escape the fact that it is by far the most globally connected region of the world. It depends on other parts of the world to sell its export goods, which are, particularly out of South America, dominated by commodities. There isn't enough of a local market to consume those. It needs to sell around the world.
Oil, gas, mining, crops.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the other is the fact that wealthy Latin Americans keep about $2.5 trillion of savings abroad, precisely out of fear of devaluations at home. And so the banking sector in Latin America has always depended upon foreign capital. And even though that dependency has dropped dramatically, it's still there. And so when capital markets become tighter in places like New York, as brokers are trying to cover their bets, they draw money indiscriminately from wherever they place it abroad. And so it was precisely the darlings of the market, like Brazil and Colombia, that captured so much foreign investment in their capital markets over the last few years that suffered such a huge outflow of money. And when that money was going, the local wealthy investors said, I'm not going to stick around and watch my money disappear. So they fled their capital. And so you had very quick capital flight. And this was really troubling because Latin America, in those particular markets, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, and others, were doing everything right. And so it was inexplicable. And it all ties back to the fact that these markets were never decoupled, that that was always an illusion. And when China starts selling less to the United States, they start buying less iron ore. They start buying less steel. And that has an impact in commodity prices, which affects South America as well.
Let's hear from our listeners. We've got Enrique calling from Montpelier, Vermont. Enrique, you're on the air. What do you see?
Specific to Venezuela, I do business in Venezuela. I've been doing business in Venezuela for the past 16, 18 years. I see the really a problem with President Chavez's political attitude of nationalizing the private industry, and also, I mean, the way the regulations that he has been putting in place is, to my feeling, they are basically customized to destroy the private industry. And although he has been having a great revenues last year from the petroleum industry or from the petroleum sales, those revenues are coming down, and he's making promises to the people down there that I don't see how he's going to be able to achieve. Last week, for example, he promised to invest $100 billion in the basic industries, and basically Venezuela, I think, too much as I know, revenues for petroleum is about $35-38 billion.
So right, heavy dependence there, and those prices way, way down from their highs. Enrique, let us look at that. Ricardo Avila in Bogota, how about Hugo Chavez and his oil money-driven sort of revolution in Venezuela? It's got to be having trouble with the enormous fall in oil prices. Where does that leave him?
Well, yes, but at the same time, he's still very strong in political terms. I mean, this referendum in which the question was if Venezuelans approved for an indefinite re-election of the president was approved only a couple of weeks ago. And there is no, I mean, opposition has been growing, but he's still the main political figure there. So he has been able to convince most Venezuelans, especially poor ones, that he is the only alternative, and he's still there. I believe that he's going to have some serious trouble, but at the same time, I believe that he's going to be at the Palacio de Miraflores for many more months to come.
John Price, what about countries that have leaned more to the left in Latin America? For many years, Washington kind of lectured Latin American countries when they got in trouble, Argentina and others, on how they ought to do it. Now Washington has its own problems. Does that leave it unable to lay down a model anymore? And what does that mean for the region? Does it matter?
Well, I think you're right. And I think actually the sort of benign neglect of the U.S. in Latin America, although some bemoan it, I think has been a positive move for Latin America, because Latin America has been able to deal with its own problems, with its own capital and its own talent. There was a revolution in Latin America in the sense that a lot of its most talented people that run its ministries of finance today and other divisions of government were the same people who went abroad and studied in Ivy League schools and were trained in institutes like the World Bank and the IMF and the IDB. And these are people who, frankly, are as talented managers of their economy as you'll find anywhere in the world. And they have this sort of self-confidence to discern between when the U.S. is providing good advice and when it's providing erroneous advice. So I think there's a level of maturity there in certainly in the five or six standout economies in Latin America that have changed the conversation between Latin America and the United States positively.
Ricardo Avila, do you see Latin America looking to Washington for guidance anymore, for anything, given that the United States has such serious economic problems of its own?
I think that a little bit less. I mean, the region has been basically neglected since 9/11. So I believe there is hope in President Obama, and basically people expect that he will be able to solve the economic crisis. But in this particular case, I believe that countries and presidents are looking to see what they can do, and they're not expecting much help from the U.S.
Let's get a call from Ricardo in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Ricardo, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you see?
Well, I wanted to ask your analysts, Ricardo, my tocayo, and John, about whether countries such as Mexico, where I'm from, can use the Keynesian approach that the U.S. is doing with its stimulus package to kind of get their economies going, or if their trouble getting capital, which you have discussed, will just cause economic instability in those countries and cause too much inflation or something. And what alternatives could Latin American countries follow in order to get out of this crisis?
It's a great question. Thank you very much, Ricardo. Ricardo Avila in Bogota, how about it? Is that an option for Latin American countries? The IMF is saying 1.1% growth this year across the region after years of 5% growth. John Price was talking about the difficulty in getting access to capital. The U.S., of course, just borrows more and is in the midst of doing that on a huge scale right now. What are Latin America's options for stimulus?
Well, it depends on the country. I mean, the country that everyone is envious about is Chile. Chile was able to save lots of money from their when the prices of copper were high. And they saved something like the equivalent of 12% of GDP. So they are beginning to spend that. I mean, because that was the whole idea behind the strategy. So they really have room to expand fiscally and to help their internal economy. Mexico is trying to do something similar. And some other countries, for example, Colombia is trying to do that too. But the problem is that we don't have, you find in these situations that the world is unfair because, for example, Colombia has a fiscal deficit of 3% of GDP. If we were going to go as high as the U.S. to 10% of GDP, the market would pound us. So in that sense, we don't have that much room as developed countries.
So, John Price, does that leave Latin America then essentially just watching the world economy and its biggest markets, and it simply has to wait for those to come back, for its own economies to rebound?
Well, it's a great point. What you're going to see, and you know, everybody says that the recovery will begin in the United States. I'm not so sure it'll be that plain a picture. But you know, returning to the point about Mexico, countries like Mexico, even Chile to some degree. Ecuador, Venezuela, and others, what those countries have in common, and they're rarely grouped together, but what they have in common is a parastatal company that is based upon extraction of copper in Chile, oil in Mexico, Venezuela, and Ecuador, where these companies contribute through royalties and through taxes an enormous amount of the government tax haul every year. Something like in the case of Mexico, when oil was over $100 a barrel is about 40% of their tax income.
Wow.
So as oil comes down, and Pemex is one of the most inefficient oil companies in the world, its ability to contribute taxes to the government drops precipitously. And so the Mexican government, not only do they not have the luxury of being able to tap capital markets or go to the Chinese and sell them bonds, but they don't even have as much revenue coming in. And so you're seeing a lot of cancellation of infrastructure projects and big, ambitious spending projects that looked viable a couple years ago. Mm.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how the global economic crisis is hitting Latin America. We're joined today from Bogota, Colombia, by Ricardo Avila. He's editor-in-chief of Portfolio, daily financial paper published in Colombia. And from Toronto, normally Miami-based, John Price. He's managing director for business intelligence at Kroll Associates, responsible for Latin America. Let's get a call right here from New Haven, Connecticut. And Jen, hi, Jen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom, this is Jen. Yeah, my question, I'm an economics student currently, and I'm getting ready to graduate in May, and I also have severe interest in international business. And currently I'm taking a class on development economics, and my question is based on the drug war and how it affects developing economies, specifically in Latin America, and which is taking more precedence, the problems with the drug war and how it's affecting the economy, or the actual political scene that's affecting it more?
Let's take that question right to Colombia, a country that knows something about drug war. Ricardo Avila, how about it? Mexico clearly struggling with this right now. How big an issue, when you look on in mega economic terms, is the drug flow and the drug war in determining how people, countries are doing?
Well, I believe that right now the situation, of course, is much more serious in Mexico than in Colombia. I mean, we know how bad things can turn out from a painful experience. Basically here what we see is that the drug economy is going down, but it's not hurting the real economy, because the weight of the drug economy in Colombia is less than 3% of GDP. So in that sense, we don't see any major changes. I would say that the major concern is Mexico, because of the violence and the whole social network, how it's been affected by this.
John Price, look to Miami, if you would, a central interaction point for North American and Latin American economies with its own drug history. But beyond that, how do you see the impact of the economic downturn on the economy of Miami, the sort of interaction between North and South there?
Well, Miami has always prided itself on being a place that benefits both from when Latin America is up and when it's down. When it's up, Latin Americans come to shop. They buy real estate, take on second homes, send their kids there to go to school, etc. And when times are bad, they send their capital there. They often bring themselves and their families and, again, drive the real estate market up. This time around, it's a little different in the sense that Miami went, of course, through an incredible real estate bubble, in part driven by Latin American money. And that bubble has now burst, and real estate is down and continues to drop. And so people are not investing in real estate. And so that bonanza of investment from Latin America into Miami has dropped. And with the slide in currencies in places like Colombia and Mexico and Brazil, even Argentina and Chile, the influx of tourists from the region into Miami and their ability to sort of shop like mad has also dropped. You know, when I'm out with friends and we walk into a sort of high-end mall, if we're speaking Spanish to each other, the salesman will immediately gravitate towards us because they assume that we're from the region and therefore we're there to drop $2,000 or $3,000 in shopping. If I walk in speaking English, they just ignore me because I'm just a poor gringo out to buy a pair of socks. That has changed. Recently in the mall, speaking Spanish, they have not been all over me because, again, it's really depressed that sort of high-end shopping inflow that's been going on.
Let's get a call from Collinsville, Connecticut, and Graham. Graham, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks very much for having me on. And I'll just make a comment, and then I'll hang up because I haven't listened to your whole program.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, yourself as the moderator and then your two speakers, but this show reminds me a bit of Cold War rhetoric. And so you've got two invited speakers on, but it seems to me that what they're doing is they're trying to sort of slam Venezuela, Bolivia, and Ecuador for the changes they're bringing about, and at the same time they're trying to hold up Mexico, Peru, and Colombia as countries that are favorable to international capital. If you take a step back and look at the situations of violence and repression in the region, we're sort of highlighting, in the case of Colombia and Mexico, two of the most violent, brutal countries in the region today, where the levels of poverty, particularly in the case of Mexico, are increasingly, and at the same time, without pretending that Venezuela, Ecuador, and Colombia are perfect countries, you've got governments in place really trying to bring about some very creative, if not different, solutions to long-term problems of poverty, oppression, and racism. And though I haven't listened to the whole program to date, my comment is I'm hearing echoes of the Cold War in this program and not a more open, creative discussion about how different governments are trying to deal with long-term, very entrenched problems of poverty, racism, and repression.
Grandma, I welcome your call, and I'm glad for it. I have to say, I haven't heard slamming But we are investigating here, and it's a question that, that rises easily and inappropriately out of the history here. John Price, how about it? Are you you know, an anti-Chavez guy or out to slam the kind of left-leaning trends in Latin America? You hear Graham's concern.
Well, no. I mean, my position as a, as an analyst in a company that that advises government and business, you know, my job is to predict what's going to happen, not to take sides. And, you know, to your point, it is a good point that particularly in Venezuela, there has been tremendous spending in education and health by the Chavez government. Mm-hmm. And there's no question that that has led to political victory. But the prediction is that as oil prices have dropped precipitously, his ability to keep funding that goes away. And he doesn't have a private sector to fall upon because he essentially scared it away. Rightfully or wrong, the fact is that wealthy Venezuelans took their capital abroad and foreign investors stopped investing there. So when the public's the government's ability to keep the investment up stops, then there will be trouble ahead. I also want to point out that many of the sort of barometers of social development have actually gotten worse in Venezuela and Argentina. Today, Caracas is by far the most dangerous city in Latin America with a murder rate something like four times what it is in Medellin. So as Colombia has gotten better in terms of safety, Venezuela, particularly Caracas, has gotten worse. The same actually can be said in terms of, believe it or not, the distribution of income, the difference between rich and poor has not improved in Venezuela during the term of Chavez. What has happened is you've seen more services available to the poor, but you've also seen massive inflation. And inflation is the worst enemy to the poor because they don't have the luxury of taking their savings offshore and keeping them in dollars. They have to keep them in Bolivar, and the Bolivar keeps losing value, whether it's in the real, in the black market, which is the closest thing to a real market, or the sort of fictitious market. And in Venezuela, you will see a massive devaluation sometime from now over the next 18 months. Time to be chosen by, will be chosen by Chavez, but it will decimate many of the wealth creation advancements of the poor in that country.
Ricardo Avila in Colombia, I wonder how you heard the new CIA chief, President Obama's CIA chief, Leon Panetta. Again, when he came out and said, you know, I've just met with someone from Latin America saying that there are serious problems that involve economic instability. He's an intelligence chief, so maybe, presumably, he's speaking with some intelligence officer from Latin America. Who do you, what kind of person or who do you think Leon Panetta is talking to there? And does that sound like Cold War rhetoric to you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, what is interesting about this crisis is that during the Great Depression of the 1930s, there are some papers about this saying that most democratically elected governments at that time changed into the hands of military governments because of the crisis. Here, actually, the ones that are in danger are left-leaning governments, and it's not because of ideological things, it's because of economics. If people feel poorer in 1 or 2 years, basically, they're going to punish the governments that made the decisions or didn't get them out of the crisis. And I honestly believe that the ones that are in danger are not only Venezuela, Argentina, and Ecuador, but also Bolivia and Nicaragua. And it's not because of ideology. It's basically because people will feel the crisis in their pockets. And the ones that are going to feel the crisis in a harder way are going to punish the politicians that are in charge.
Let's get a call from James in New Haven, Connecticut. James, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm a priest here in New Haven, Connecticut. I'm a pastor of a largely immigrant community from Latin America of 18 countries, and I appreciate the show and the discussion about Latin America because I think that we, in general, in the North, fail to understand the complexity of Latin America, particularly when we've only really looked toward Latin America through NAFTA. But many of our policies have failed to provide for a integral development of folks. Infrastructure in many of the areas continues to be poor. Local corruption continues to really inhibit people's ability
And the lack of education that's available to people. I mean, we take for granted public education here in the United States, and the amount of money that people, aside from building their homes, when people send money back home to Ecuador, to Mexico, to their countries, it's to educate their children that are there.
James, as a priest, do you see the immigrant community out of Latin America in your community, and can you feel a change in the economic climate in their interaction with the home countries?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've traveled to Mexico, to the villages where our folks are from, as well as to Ecuador. And last April, I spent a month in Ecuador visiting from Puerto Quito in the north all the way down to Loja in the south, to the coast and to the rainforest region of Morona Santiago. And as I saw then, the rise in food prices really affecting the people. And then, of course, a lot of folks are imports are coming in from Europe. So you have the euro, the exchange rate of the euro, while the Ecuadorian economy is based on the dollar, and the effect that that is having on people's lives. And I also think that we don't understand fully the impact of the continued oligarchy that continues. Somebody mentioned earlier about the ease of people who have wealth to be able to move that wealth offshore.
And they do.
There's large colonies of, for example, of Ecuadorians of wealth that benefited from the economic collapse of their country that have moved to Miami. As a matter of fact, a former president is a teacher at Harvard now, and there's a warrant out for his arrest, and he's here in hiding in this country. So there's we really fail, I think, to understand the complexity of the political situation in the different Latin American countries. And this whole Bolivarian movement is something that's been part of just it goes right to the family structure of Latin America, the desire for unity to be together.
The movement of Hugo Chavez there. James, our time grows short, but I appreciate your call very much. Ricardo Avila, let's look at one of those corners for a moment. Argentina has actually had riots by farmers. What's going on there? Why that much unrest and that strain between the Kirchner government there and the agriculture sector?
Basically, because the Kirchner government has taxed them very heavily and has relied on the income from their agriculture export sector to finance their expansion. So basically, that's part of the reason, and part of the boom that took place last year bypassed farmers, and that's why they don't like Cristina Kirchner. And also now, when the drought came, the situation got worse. So they are not very happy with that. And in Argentina, in particular, you not only have economical problems but also political ones. And I believe that that government in particular never had a honeymoon, and because of the decisions it took.
You've spoken of the some 40 million Latin Americans who've come out of poverty in recent years, though many, many still in it. Do you see those advances being reversed by the crisis that we're looking at now, Ricardo?
Yes, partially, yes, absolutely. I mean, the first shock was when food prices were high. We have to remember there were riots in Haiti. But now that incomes are going down, one of the many aspects of the crisis is that remittances are going down. In 2007, the region received something like $66 billion from people living abroad. And we just saw the figure from Mexico for January. Remittances to Mexico, which are one of their main sources of foreign revenue, were down 12%. So that impacts directly poor households. So I believe that poverty is going to go up. I expect that some of the gains are not going to be lost completely, but for sure this is going to have a social impact.
And politics turn where, John Price, in this environment if it lasts for some considerable longer time, as we're told it may well?
Well, the good news about the timing of this crisis is that, with the exception of Argentina, there isn't a major economy going to the polls this year. And so the race is on to see how politically this crisis will fall out. Some who are optimists would say that as the sort of market-unfriendly politics of places like Venezuela, Argentina, and Ecuador, maybe Bolivia, are punished by the lack of investment coming out of those government coffers, will showcase that going in that direction was wrong and therefore will keep countries like Mexico and Peru, which came very close to radical changes in government a couple years ago, keep them in a sort of centrist path. There are others who say that rising unemployment in places like Mexico could shift politics to the left, could shift politics against business. So the political fallout is yet to be decided, and that really will be the end game that will be interesting to watch over the next 2 years.
And as we've heard in this hour, many different perspectives on what to hope for and anticipate there. John Price with Kroll Associates joining us this hour from Toronto. Thanks very much for being with us, Mr. Price.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Ricardo Avila, Editor-in-Chief of Portfolio in Bogota, Colombia. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Avila.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.